So now we will go over and open up the line just before we go into Zappa. Let's see if anybody, we've got a few people here. Would you, anybody want to comment on what you've heard?
Hi.
Oh, Santa's here from the German economy of scale. Do you have something to comment on what we did?
Yes, actually, I think we could link with many of the things you were talking about.
Okay, good. Yes, Zappa fits here. So just before you start, Roxy, let's see if someone else, because once we start the Zappa thing, we shut down the lines and we become a solo effort only allowed to be penetrated by Bert. Or is it Bart? No, Bert. So Ginny and Greg, do you have anything to say? Sean, do you have anything to say? And whoever else is on here as an unavailable, blocked situation.
Hi, Bob. It's Sean.
Hi, Bob.
Okay, first I'll go with Ginny. Yes, Ginny. You have something to say about what?
Hi, Bob. Greg and I were listening. Yeah, I thought it was interesting, the whole recap of I&M. Is that the last segment on Carolyn Gorton?
Oh, no, no. Carolyn's just halfway through the book. This is going to go on for a few more weeks. Carolyn's enjoying reading the book. She hasn't finished it, and she's finding all kinds of interesting things she likes to talk about. So, why? You want us to end soon?
No, I don't want you to end. I was curious. It didn't sound like it had come to any conclusion. I was just curious.
No. Well, we're part of what Gorton is talking about. This is conversational processing. You know, there's no finish point in this. It's only when you realize what the end conclusion is, I and them, that you can step out of the addictive nature of the participatory conversation.
Okay.
Hey?
Okay.
Did you get that?
I'm catching on. Somebody told me Ion was going to be on tonight. Is that a yes or a no? Or
Ion was going to be on, but then unforeseen events put it off. We're hoping next week. But
okay.
I can't promise anything, but Ion's going to be here pretty soon. It's just a matter of the fine-tuning of the incidents that evoked this Ionic fast.
Very nice. Okay. Sounds wonderful.
But you should be engaging with us anyways. I've decided to say that when Ion isn't here, Payday is a Bob cult. When I'm here without Ion, it's a cult. When Ion comes in, it's not a cult. So
And what is the value of saying it that way, services and disservices? What is the value of saying that it's a Bob cult?
Well, most people think Ion's a cult, and Bob is the liberator from the Ion cult. Actually, the way I run the thing here, it could be conceived. I do want people to talk about and point to me as the punchline here, so that definitely sounds like a cult. But because it isn't really a cult, I don't mind pretending it is. And Ion's the one who has to be careful about appearing a cult or not. Ion could easily become a cult somewheres in the universe from its own power. So the services are that one should learn to engage a cult, put on the cult, adopt its mores. Like the old thing was, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Well, when you're in a cult, practice suppressing your ridiculous little personal opinions and merge with the occult and make yourself the leader of the occult. Right,
okay, so well, I think I've done a great job at that. Yeah, I can give myself an A on that score. I'm good.
You infiltrated a cult. Yes, now you're in leadership position.
And I can do the party line and stuff like that, and I don't talk about myself personally anymore and all those other things. All right, very good. I did well. I got a good score on my scorecard. That's all I'm here to do is just check in and see if I'm still part of the cult.
Yes, and remember, you also practice not being a cult quadriphenically. You just have to self-both
ability. Yes, well, I do that in the... That's right. I do that in my non-time, in my non-radio time, that I'm very uncult-like. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
Do I have to do it here, too?
No comment.
Okay.
That's for you to find out. You have to see the consequences of attempting to do it or not doing it.
Uh-oh. There's very harsh consequences in a cult, so I want to make sure I do it the right way. That's right. Very good.
Right.
Very good.
And remember, we have one big act of deception, so my rules may be setting you up for something you didn't foresee.
Yes, that has happened before. Yes, I'm very aware of that. All right, excellent, excellent.
Well, very good. So I hope people, new people who are listening to this, are thoroughly delighted at the complexity that we present and want to engage.
That's right, that's right. Yes, and Roxy's very good at presenting complexity, too, so that'll be good. Are you going to talk about Zappa some more?
Of course, we're going to do it a little.
Gosh.
And now you're not interested in Zappa, but there's something you should engage. You should start to. Hey, we don't want you
talking.
That's
my quadriphenic non-cult behavior, Bob. We already have discussed this. This is my quadriphenic. No, it's very.
We mark you on what you attempt to put on as your detached non-cult behavior. Zappa is too easy to reject.
It's so hard to reject, Bob, because Zappa's just so awesome. You just don't know how hard this is for me to maintain this rejectory status.
I can agree with that, because you did, out of the blue, denounce Zappa about 3 months ago. Wasn't called for. You'd been an apparent fan. Yes, I see. You're under great strain trying to maintain this anti-Zappa position. Okay, that's clever. All right.
We'll see
what happens.
All right,
don't get your blood analyzed. Do not get your blood analyzed.
No, I'm not going to the doctor. Very good.
Okay, well, very good. We'll see if anybody else. So Sean had something to say. Sean, you were going to opine.
Yes, Bob. It's just all this Carolyn Guertin book, and while this whole series has been going on, I saw how easy it was to go into that mindset of the whole Oprah Winfrey thing, wanting to make money out of something and using the internet. But then at the same time, you sort of taught me to not go against it too much or make it another problem, but just
let me understand you. Yeah, you attempted to become an Oprah Winfrey? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, well, you know, the whole famous thing. I want to be famous and...
Oh, did you genuinely want to be famous?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think everyone wants to.
Okay.
I think it's okay for the right reason. Yeah, just that whole... And loads of money, and you think then everything's sorted because you have money to fix all your problems.
Right.
But it's an illusion.
How did you realize it was an illusion?
Well, you would put things. You did a whole session on it on one of the Watch Youth shows,
probably
3 months ago, and you just really went into it, and I just saw it clearly, and then sort of stepped out of it a bit because I was busy building a website, and
you were trying to make a documentary on me. And become famous through that. Are you still doing the documentary, or did you give up on that?
Oh, yes, the RNA song. It's halfway there, and it's really good.
Oh, so you're still making
it? Let's just say that, yes, my daughter, she started it, and she's going to finish it. And the person she is when she's finishing it is a much more person that's engaged in the drops and...
Okay,
she's different,
good.
So it's going to be
different.
Very real. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be different from what she thought she was going to make.
Yeah, and the shots we did in the beginning, she was still in an old mindset. So it all works out. And lots of things that I had to find out in between about radioactive and all that stuff.
Right, that's the service of the conversational nature of the Android meme. People can talk themselves in circles and actually learn things because they go back over and rediscover things because there's enough time to express yourself and then make these pattern recognitions. So we're endlessly learning things about this self-awareness process that the Android meme provides for us. So many people make a goal. And then Barry Nevitt said, plan very carefully what you're going to do and prepare to do the opposite. See, that happened to your daughter. And we do so much information processing that kind of learning about flipping into the opposite is inevitable. So we have produced a very super sophisticated population of producer maniacs that have nowhere to go and are wondering why the co-anesthetes, not the synesthetes, the co-anesthetes, the integrators, are so silly and obsolete in their methods. And we hear that on Carolyn's show every week. She can just take any recent quote from some doctor and they show their ignorance in appalling levels. So we're all learning the punchline, the iron punchline, and then trying to figure out how to survive with that knowing. You get that, John?
Yeah, definitely. And for me, it's making it real. So if you just go off on that Oprah Winfrey thing, you're just part of the plasticness of it all for me. But if you make it real and you don't settle until it's real, and it's a very, sometimes you get very uncomfortable because you set rules of where you're supposed to be. But then as soon as you notice that and break the rule and just go with the ease again, then you just get into that flow of non-stop and just go.
And you may become famous accidentally, and that'll be a challenge for you, how you handle that. Hopefully you'll have learned from
us
how to be able to handle and make fun of it as it's happening.
Yeah, definitely. And the end in mind is you just want that place on your island, like you guys. That's what you want, really.
Well, I would say you already have it. You just have to start
pretending
that you have it in many ways. You don't have it perfectly, but you could start to hallucinate on your own immediate environment and pretend you have it. Wish fulfillment. Start fantasizing that you're living in Maui.
Oh, I do.
Okay, that's very good. All right, thank you, Sean. Now,
thanks.
I think all this stuff we can use, Roxy. So let me just see if this person wants to say something. That's who is Newark? Is that Yuri? Who just came in? 973.
No, it's Tim Bach.
All right, Tim, we haven't got much time, but do you have something to say?
No, I just got on. I didn't hear what you guys were talking about.
Did you say you don't have any idea?
No, I didn't have any idea what you guys were talking about. I just hopped on.
Okay, well, you listen to the archive. What we talked about the last 10 minutes was pretty good.
Okay,
so we're now going to mute people and start with the...
All participants are now muted.
Reality. Is that Roxy, this one? This unavailable? Is that
Roxy? Yes, everything is complementing our...
Yes. So I will let you begin.
Exploration.
You have a lot to say. You have a lot to say already based on what you've been hearing, so you take it away. It is the beginning of the Zap Hour.
Yes, I was thinking of the thunders and how the thunders were explored by McLuhan and Zappa, and how their works in a way are exposing all the genesis of the logos and the different medias from the fall until the Ionic. And in the book Culture is Our Business, McLuhan does very interesting explorations by presenting ads and making very short comments. He's explaining the environment. And in a way, I find a lot of similarities with the work of Frank Zappa. And Frank Zappa had this great concept of the conceptual continuity, which is also what McLuhan was doing. Like all of his books are at the end one big work, as well as all of the music of Frank Zappa is one big work. And I was thinking how the production of both of them in a way show the effects of the electric environment, because as I was editing the video we did on the book of Eric McLuhan on synesthesia, you are reading this list of the effects of the electric environment done by Eric McLuhan. And yeah, I was thinking and seeing how both Marshall McLuhan and Frank Zappa are actually commentating on all these effects with their works. And I would like today to talk about this, the Thunders, how they somehow are making a summary of the effects of the Thunders and this odyssey we had been going through.
Right. Are you referring to the Thunders in the Book of Revelation, as well as the Thunders in Finney's Wake? Which ones are you referring to?
Yes, to all of them, because I said in the Genesis, your work is about taking us back to the tree of knowledge. And for me, that was really intriguing. And now I understand why he meant that. And McLuhan saw in the work of Joyce and in the Genesis, in the Bible, this whole metanoia of the appearance of technologies. And he saw how the Genesis is all about appearing technologies, how man starts agriculture and clothing and constructing and all these different technologies appearing. And his approach of his explorations of trying to explain to the fish the thing he could not really. He saw there is more than just this phenomenon of the environment. There is something behind that, and he saw it's in the logos, that is this link that connects us to what we now call the non-physical. But he had a more Catholic view of what is really happening. And although he didn't say it openly in the book of the synesthesia and the soul, Eric McLuhan is linking the soul with all these explorations of his father. So,
yes,
like,
right. Very good.
Behind that exploration of the whole history of media, he had another agenda. Like, he was trying to understand this connection with the real formal cause.
Yes. That's a pretty good statement. Are you waiting for a reaction now?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's react by looking at the next, say, 22 names on the freakout list to see if it fits in, because that's very good the way you link the thing and the fish, which is Zappa's work, The Thing Fish,
yeah.
And also was the cover of Troutmaster Replica, his buddy that Frank produced in 1969, the album where Captain Beefheart is wearing a fish mask. That's why the album's called Troutmaster Replica. And they're showing that somebody has been kicked out of the water and is in dire straits. And McLuhan was using the same metaphor. So that's what was intriguing back then in 69. I'd be reading the new book by McLuhan, War and Peace in the Gold Village. It came out, I think, in the summer of 68. It came out in 68, probably the summer. So I'm reading it through the next few months into early 69, and a big part of it at the end of the book is about the message to the fish fresh out of the water. So it was very intriguing that these, in relation to McLuhan, these teenagers, Beefheart and Zappa, these young guys in their mid-20s, show that image on this, what's considered one of the greatest albums ever made. When Rolling Stone does the top 100, Beefheart's Trope Mass Replica is considered a colossal masterpiece and innovation. And Zappa and him did it together. And there he is with a fish mask on. Like, it's like a human being, the chemical body, still trying to be a fish. They're no longer can be a fish in the new situation, but they're trying to put the fish head back on, right? And all of the retroactive nostalgic movements of the late 60s were attempts to put the fish head back on. Get me back in some water that I can be oblivious to. So that's what's interesting.
And Zappa said, don't trust the fish people. But
out of the blue, yes, he said that. That's right. Don't trust the fish people.
Another thing that this type of similarities between McLuhan and Zappa, I don't know how well they both knew each other's work, but there is a lot of maybe in their producing and consuming, they somehow had the same type of altering. Because for McLuhan, the mother of invention, and I think he said actually this phrase, is the Logos in 1977. And I was surprised to see McLuhan using that mother of invention. That was the name of the band, the Frank Zappa.
Okay, a couple of little anecdotal things. In Marshall McLuhan never talked about Frank, but you never knew what Marshall was aware of. Maybe if some student had brought up Zappa, McLuhan would have talked about it. But I do know that Eric McLuhan, his son, said in a class back in 1978-79 to some art students in Toronto that he was trying to explain a Manipian satire, and he cited the album We're Only for the Money, which is Zappa's satire of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Eric cited that as an example of Manipian satire. So Eric himself knew. Whether he discussed it with his father is another point, but that's close enough. If Eric's saying it, then it's in McLuhan's awareness, or McLuhan, if Eric told him about it, he'd understand it. Okay, so there's that anecdote. Also, Bucky Fuller had a book about him, the same people who made The Medium as a Massage and War and Peace in the Global Village, Quentin Fury and Jerome Agel, those combination of picture and text, which was innovative in graphics history in retrospect. There's a book on the McLuhan book and the Bucky Fuller book. So there was a book of Bucky Fuller's quotes, and in it, Bucky Fuller has a statement by Frank Zappa. Bucky Fuller or the people, maybe Bucky had nothing to do with the book, Jerome Adriel and Quentin Fiore may have been aware of Frank. And Frank says something like, all the technician pawns of the scientific establishment. So he was talking about people getting jobs. At best, they would just be technician pawns. I think that was his phrase. I have the book out in the garage. You could probably find it. That people were technician pawns of the present corporate structure. So pawn is a servo mechanism. That's what McLuhan was pointing out, how people were servo mechanism of their technologies. So Bucky Fuller's people knew to quote Frank Zappa. But it's interesting. What do you call that awareness that McLuhan and Zappa had? Whereas McLuhan had it quite consciously, Zappa had it by default because he allowed himself to catch up to what McLuhan was seeing, not as coldly as McLuhan, but equally presenting the same awareness in his artifacts that he made, as much as one could express with Gutenberg Arts, Electrified. So there never was a discussion, as far as I know, between McLuhan and Zappa, other than the luncheon that I put on at Stanley's in the Village on June 18th, 1967, where Krishnamurti spoke to all the holy offices, Beter, McLuhan, Herbert Armstrong, LaRouche. I have them all there. You can look it up in my diaries. But I don't recall any of them really talking to each other. There's a bit of discussion, and they each say their bit, but they didn't stay around to interact with each other, and they didn't know who each other was at that point. People didn't become aware of Frank Zappa until 1968-69 in the world of McLuhan, you know, the older academic world. And this
it's interesting how they both explore the same analogic thunders, all the medias that they saw somehow still used, like the telegram, the telephone, the TV. And McLuhan says, culture is our business, and Zappa says, we are here for the money. But
right.
In a way, they were predecessors of what's going on now with the 12th Thunder. You're in the new era where the production and distribution has become cheaper and everybody has access to these mediums and everybody is producing. And as you say, the consumer, the audience is also producing.
Yeah.
And the vortex is even more chaotic, and there is much more big data, and the effects of all this have to be balanced by the Ionic, and this is the new situation that they were already somehow seeing, but they stopped with the Android meme.
Yes.
And then you come to complement them with the Ionic, and you're making this metanoia of seeing the effects of all the analogic medias in the environment to somehow explain to the tribe the
right.
hidden effects of the new environment.
Now, you take Bob Dylan, get a particular point here, in 1965-66. Dylan now says that he doesn't know who that was that made those great albums, Bringing It All Back Home, Highway 61 Revisited, and Blonde on Blonde. He says, he was interviewed in 60 Minutes 10 years ago or something, and he says, I don't know that mind that made that, and I certainly couldn't do it again. So Dylan basically freaked out. He became famous with the song Like a Rolling Stone, and Frank said, if this song does the work it should do, when he heard it in 1965 or so, he said, if this does the work, then I don't have to be a composer. I don't have to be a musician, or I don't have to engage in a public musical role. He decided after a year or so that the people didn't get Dylan's message. And so he said, well, maybe there is something for me to do. Well, we'll just redo Dylan a little more appropriately or something. So Frank corrects Dylan's freakout, because Dylan admits that he got out of control, and he had his motorcycle accident, and then he retired from the scene. And he said later, a few years later, that he was not aware as he should have been, even though he was an archetype of super awareness through his art, his music. So Dylan freaks out. So then Frank comes back and is going to redo Dylan, but he's going to name what's going on. He's going to call it Freak Out. And so he puts out an album, well, he starts making an album in February 67 that is delayed by corporate complications, so it doesn't get actually released till 68. But the very same time, February, March 67, McLuhan is part of an album that's going to do the same thing. Here's Frank talking about people how to tell him how to freak out comprehensively with awareness. And McLuhan comes in and is explaining why people are freaking out. So in that book, The Medium is a Massage, there's a picture of Dylan, the famous profile picture of him, and the makers, Jerome Agel and Quentin Fury, quote the Dylan song Ballad of a Thin Man, where it says, you know, Mr. Jones, you don't know what's going on. Forget the actual line. Hey, Mr. Jones, whatever it is, you don't know what's going on. So McLuhan takes that quote that Dylan wrote and superimposes over Dylan's face, saying that you, Bob Dylan, don't know what's going on. So it's very interesting that Dylan didn't, and he admitted later he didn't know what was going on. So Dylan freaked out first, became famous, and then had to become confused and bothered by the fame that happened. So Frank comes in, and McLuhan, at the same time making albums, a year later after Dylan's, and they're saying, we know, if we're successful, we'll know what kind of fame we'll get, but we will not be hypnotized by it. We will not be subjected to it. At best, I'll become president of the United States, says Zappa, and I'll use it against the android meme. So I'm looking at this book called Freakout. A Freakout in the Making is a bubble coming out of Frank Zappa's head. And this book by Scott Parker inventories the 179 people that Frank said helped him understand what was happening in the mid-60s. Now, McLuhan lists about 178 people, 179 people in his writings. He has many, many, many sources that he quotes, as many as Frank. Not the same, but they overlap a little bit. So you have this interesting pattern. The guy that produced Like a Rolling Stone, Tom Wilson, he's the black engineer-producer who makes Dylan's album, the song, Like a Rolling Stone, a big hit. He then goes and produces Frank Zappa's album, Freakout, right after doing Dylan. So Tom Wilson is the common ground. He's there when Dylan, by default, becomes supremely perceptive. And then he goes over and does the remake of Dylan, by Frank. And in the middle of it is a guy named John Simon who works with Tom Wilson, and he produces McLuhan's album, the one in early 67. You have this nexus of people touching, interacting with each other. That's incredible. You get what I'm saying here?
Yes.
It's so close.
Yes.
And you know, John Simon, we actually, Mark Stallman and I called him up a few years, well, maybe 2005, 2004, called him up. He lived outside New York City and asked him about that experience of working with McLuhan. And no quotes come to mind. He said that he would be interested in being interviewed about it, but he couldn't do it right now. He's very busy. He went on to produce a lot of other famous people, John Simon. But he had this McLuhan album in his resume. So you have John Simon and Tom Wilson and Frank Zappa and Bob Dylan. It's a tetrad. Dylan causes an interruption, then that causes a disturbance, which retrieves capture and leakage. Dylan himself gets captured, and it flips into, when pushed to extreme, it flips into the mothers of invention. And you're right. McLuhan is writing about the history of inventions and what needs an invention brings into a society, and what necessities. And Frank does not want to call himself the mother's invention. It didn't occur to him. It's just that the record company forced him to drop the name Mothers because it had obscene implications, the name Mothers. So he had to add of invention. So he ends up working for the McLuhan Media Analysis, Media Ecology zine, scene and zine by his choice of band name, Mother's Invention. And all this is happening when Rai is returning to the plane of essence. Rai is here in Maui, acting out through Ralph Doobie the end of the individual, the end of some kind of literate artistic genius archetype. And so Cosmic Awareness is discussing, I forget what I was going to say about 10 minutes ago, but you have to bring in Dave Worster and Cosmic Awareness in the mix of this too, So when Frank started to become prominent, I saw Frank as an afterimage of Rai. I saw McLuhan as an afterimage of Rai. This is when I was in the Cosmic Awareness Quadrant and made them the ground. You can look at the tetrads that I do on each one of them. What happens when you make Cosmic Awareness the hidden ground of an ongoing conversational process? So there's the Rai returning to essence, and the four different aspects of it. Go ahead.
Another thing that I see with this Rai coming back to essence is somehow the electric environment not only is dissolving the gas, but it's actually somehow turning on the audience. And McLuhan sees that the electric environment demands audience participation, and that's a big thing in for Zappa, that the audience is not only a passive consumer, but it's part of the of creating the concert or the performance.
Yeah, the collective free code.
Yes, and
the collective free code. No, that's really good. You bring in, what did you just say about Rai? That's exact.
It's dissolving the cough. There are like invisible effects.
That's actually what it does. Rai is the end of the guff. When the plane of essence reabsorbs Isis and Rai, there's no separateness. There's no death. There's no life. There's no difference. So that is the meaning of cosmic awareness, and that's being said right at the time that McLuhan and Zappa are acting out the artist archetype. And that's a very good point to make. That led to the guff coming forth to speak. And that's where Ion, 40 years later, completes the Rai Return to Essence. And ends up...
the electric environment demands audience participation, and even the non-physical is talking, like you said. Ion wants everybody to talk, and even the non-physical comes and starts speaking.
Starts talking.
But another of the things that happened is that this electric environment, for example, the radio, the TV, became 24 hours environment.
Yes.
You cannot turn them off anymore.
And
it became like the muzak. But it's this environment that is there, but at the same time, it's just background. It's just, it's not to be really understood or listened. It's just a background noise. It's
like the way the guff was. The guff was not supposed to be talked about, you know. You had to go to become a monk and go into esoteric spiritual exercises to engage the reality of the guff, which for most people was just a background annoyance. One of these days I'm going to die. That's all they got with. Now, when people talk about the Second Coming, they never imagined the Second Coming would be come forth and talk about Marsh McLuhan and Frank Zappa.
Say, right.
There's the weirdness of it. Here, let me just say this. Let me add this sentence just to complete it. So people became aware of Zappa and McLuhan at the same time, 67, 68, 69. They both were global icons to the degree anybody noticed an icon, because most people were getting into their own particular lifestyles and participating themselves and narcissistically engaging them, their own sovereignty. So then Ion comes forth to discuss what happened when Rai returned to essence and is forced to talk about McLuhan and Zappa. So the people that knew about McLuhan and Zappa never would associate them with the Second Coming. But when the Second Coming happened, that was one of the main things that the Ion had to talk about, thanks to me forcing them to deal with McLuhan and Zappa and Finnegan's Wake. That's the joke, is that nobody predicted that the... once Zappa and McLuhan are known, late 60s, nobody from 1970 on said, well, when Jesus comes back, he's going to be really keen on discussing McLuhan's media calls in Zappa's obscene form of music. All the time. Go ahead.
And that's, you said for the Greek, logos was the mythic. And both McLuhan and Zappa understand this mythic as outerings, which are not only the spoken word, but all types of technologies and creations.
Are the mythic, yes. Myth is the environment, the complex condensation of the many media that a culture uses. That's right, mythic. That was McLuhan's course in school, media and myth. And Frank, he didn't use the word myth, but he was constantly saying, every 18 months there'll be a new fad. And he meant by that a new myth. And he's there on duty, piercing whatever fads come down the pike. And, you know, he did that for 25 years, satirizing, puncturing the myths that the Android meme created. And McLuhan did the same thing. And so Zappa is like a high school teacher in a non-school environment, the rock and roll world. Most people didn't see that as school. But Frank was a teacher. He became into that world as a teacher. He laid out on his first album, The People You Should Read and Study. Now, McLuhan was a teacher, and he went into the global classroom and didn't act like a teacher. So they both reversed roles. Zappa, a juvenile delinquent, just gets out of jail and is going to infiltrate the culture and appear to be a rip-off ad man. You know, an exploiter, but he's actually an educator. But he doesn't, his source is not education, per se. McLuhan is obviously an educator, writes about it, causes a revolution in education, and comes forth, and people think that he's abandoned his educational pedagogic agenda and become a nut. So both, it's interesting, McLuhan was more conscious of the process than Zappa, but he was considered a guy who freaked out. Zappa was a guy not as conscious of the factors that McLuhan described, but appeared to be not freaking out. You see, they cross. There's this Zappa becomes part of the Monkees TV show, and this is 67, 68, and there's a scene on the show where Mike Nesmith, one of the Monkees, is wearing a Zappa mask. And Zappa is wearing a Mike Nesmith monkey's mask. All right? So you're looking at them, see each other.
It's very interesting how McLuhan and Zappa both see the electric environment and its effects are somehow hidden, are there 24 hours like a Muzak, educating the people, programming the people. But they both see that the advertisement is the new art form of this
right.
Cape, and like the ancient paintings in the capes, they were hidden.
Yes.
And this electric environment is like the makers, like Alice in Wonderland, and McLuhan is saying, we are in the same situation as Alice. We're in a weird environment we don't really understand. And like Alice, we just cry when we are transformed and metamorphosed. And he quotes a lot of songs, of lyrics, to illustrate this, how people love these crying songs,
yeah.
Love songs, to express this discomfort of the frequency of the electric environment. And Zappa, on the contrary, he makes fun of that.
Yeah, you're saying that McLuhan quotes the songs.
Yes.
Yes.
In
yes,
Culture Is Our Business, for example. Well, in
yes,
different books.
Does. Yes, he does. Yes. There's a famous song in the 20s, All Alone by the Radio. He says the well of loneliness that the tribal acoustic space that was retrieved by radio was a shocker to people. And then there was this song from All Alone by the Radio, and McLuhan said that was the well of loneliness that visual man fell into when they fell back into acoustic space with inside the tactile effect of electricity. And then Zappa was always making fun of the crying, Susie Cream Cheese. The whole album, Freak Out, is him interacting with the little teenager, Susie Cream Cheese, and how she's been freaking out, and Frank is trying to help her, like a teacher, like a guidance counselor. So McCoon, and so what does he call, what is the big slogan on Zappa's second album, Kill Ugly Radio? That's what McCoon was saying, the same thing. Turn off radio for a while. Leave it alone. Let us have a non-electrified environment. And McCoon was saying this, Zappa was saying the same thing. Interesting how one comes to the same conclusion if you look at all the factors that Frank listed in that famous quote. He says, we use all visual media, all perceptual deficiencies. We use God and other things that remain unnamed. And television, he said. He lists the whole inventory, which is the same inventory that McLuhan's talking about.
Yes, and for me, it's very clear that McLuhan and Zappa were both the new type of artist of the electric environment. And, well, actually, commenting on all the past thunders also. All the media and... McLuhan was the artist of the logos and the mythic, and Zappa was the artist of the acoustic,
Here's the quote. Now let's try to relate this to thunders, but where is it? Here's the quote I was trying to remember. Zappa said, now remember, He's saying what he's doing is not an object and not a project. It is both a project slash object. So remember we were talking with Carolyn Guertin about the new art has to be objectless. So Zappa does bring in the object word, but he cancels it with the word project or projection. So Zappa says his project object contains plans and non-plans, also precisely calculated event structures, think of McLuhan's talking about structures, designed to accommodate the mechanics of fate, that means the inevitable effects of media for a population that's not aware of the effect, not aware of the century shift. So Zappa's going to respond and accommodate the mechanics of fate and all bonus statistical improbabilities attendant thereto. McLuhan in 1667 is saying, we're going to see many bizarre forms manifest, be evoked here. That's what Zappa's calling bonus statistical improbabilities. And then he says, our project incorporates any available visual medium. So like McLuhan, he's available for any platform to do his art or his commentary or his amateurism. McLuhan celebrates the amateur as versus the professional. Zappa does the same thing, while also maintaining professional expertise. So Zappa said, we're going to incorporate any available visual medium, consciousness of all participants, including audience, so that means we're going to have ESP, and we're going to deal with all perceptual deficiencies, we're going to deal with God as energy, and other things. Now, that's very comprehensive, and the same comprehensiveness as McLuhan's inventory of media. McLuhan deals with perceptual deficiencies, perceptual ratio. So pretty uncanny, the similarity in their agendas. And, you know, Frank was not meeting McLuhan. He did not know of McLuhan at that time.
We could also bring Eric McLuhan and how he relates the synesthesia to the soul, because McLuhan said in the electric environment discarnates man and bring us into this angelic state, and he says we were never as religious as we are now, and this one of the effects of the electric environment is, like you said, this proliferation of new age cults and
enthusiasms, Gnostic enthusiasms is what McLuhan would say, or millennial ecstatics.
Because it's a way of trying to balance this state of freaking out like Alice in Wonderland.
Yes. and Humpty Dumpty and Old Mother Hubbard, all the fairy tale children, fairy stories, Grimm's fairy tales, and whoever the other guys are in the electronic environment. And Finnegan's Wake is riddled with them all, because you are moving into a world of fantasy, of non-physical reality, or what Eric calls the metaphysical. Once you go into electric age, Eric says, you can't have physical laws anymore. Now try to tell that to anybody from 1910 till now. Okay, you're reading up on Richard Feynman and Stephen Hawking and studying physics and the new laws they're talking about. Well, Mr. Frank Zappa and Mr. Marsh McLuhan say you can't have laws in the physical under electronic conditions. Nobody dealt with that point.
It's a worse situation because Marshall McLuhan said, for example, the Newton Empire ended in the 1900s when Max Planck created discovered the quantum physics. And then there is no more matter, and we cannot explain actually what's really... what are we made of, or what are these particles and this and that, and until now we are still looking at these little particles and lost in that labyrinth. But at the same time, the Newtonian type of thinking, the linear, the logical, makes that many people cannot recognize the non-physical, and that's the paradox that we are looking for the explanation of how logos creates, or how this reality is made, and not only the real but the cyber realities we're creating with our medias, the spaces they create, the art, the printing press, the electronic media, they all create new spaces, new realities. And now we are more into this cyberspace than in the real. And at the same time, people cannot recognize the non-physical. And it's a big problem, because we're still under the somnambulism, the hypnosis of the printing press, but we are far from that.
Right, so, that's a good point. The when people go metaphysical, the old environment becomes the necessity, the anesthetic, the mother of invention. So people started to become rampant materialists in the 20th century, right when materialism was not applicable anymore. And so the people can't handle the non-material, the metaphysical electric effect, so they grab on the recent past and make it have huge significance, archetypal intensity. And so everybody is proud, we were talking about this with OJ earlier, proud to say Bishop Usher was a jerk when he said we only live 6,000 years. Obviously Darwin and all the other material sciences have proven that we've been here millions of years, and on and on and on. So that becomes the archetype of sophisticated education, and actually is only following the ritual of the past becoming an archetype. That is the pattern that always happens with new technologies. So you had to understand McLuhan, how the past, the science, would become, the Darwinian science would become the archetype, and where people could rest their weary souls as they encounter the invisible and the non-visual. So McLuhan, one of his therapies was, I'm explaining to people why you naturally go and turn the past into an archetype. That was a huge psychology. It's a mixture of sociology and psychology, because he wasn't just analyzing individual people like Freud. He was analyzing whole trends in culture on a level of anthropology and sociology. And he was coming up with a new pattern that people fell victim to. So McLuhan explained why people would become more and more religious, but in a mixed up way. And so Gnosticism and the New Age stuff is retrieving visual identity, visual space, literate identity, against the what appears to be an anonymity that threatens to the Western identity. And then that was for most of the 20th century. Then all of a sudden the 21st century brought in technology that hoiked up private identity with your own Facebook page, your own MySpace. Now, it was a virtual, multi-body private identity, but that leads to even more innumerable confusions.
Yes, and McLuhan said, culture is our business, and Zappa said, we're here for the money, but what is the motivation of the new creators? Like John was saying, she wants to be famous. But most people, they just want some likes, as you say, and be part of the conversation and take turns on this new, dialogue
social
that we have been engaging since the fall.
Right. Now, you remember the McLuhan used to make fun of the term the horseless buggy. So that when people bought a car 120 years ago, they thought they were getting on a horse, a motorized horse. So they always saw the present in terms of the old. So they called it the car a horseless buggy. So the buggy that the horse drew in the 19th century now was mechanized without a horse, but they had to include the horse. It's just like if you're trying to become timeless, you fight against time. And you're being duped by the concept of time in your effort to be timeless. Nowadays, why do they call media social media? Media environments, as McLuhan defined them, are sociality. Language, print, electric media are sociality. So why would they call the web world, the tactile internet world, social media? Why are they redundant? Got any theories on that? It's like saying social, or media squared, or social squared. Now, all that's on my chart in 95, and I don't think the term social media came in until about 10 years later, 2005. But again, it's a horseless buggy situation. It's a silly name.
Well, it's a way of naming the new tribe, that the discarnated tribe, I suppose, that...
Well, it's a way of acknowledging the Android meme. If the Android meme is coming alive and obsolescing the chemical body, the human communication, then that's a new medium. But the Android meme tries to appear social, tries to make you feel that you can engage in the conversation. So it says, yes, we're media, but we're social media, because you might notice the fact that it's not social. It's a horseless buggy. I think Karen wants to say something.
Right. Do you think people thought media before? So-